Thank you to our worship team. I know Miles had a string break on his guitar, and that's a hard thing to play through. It's hard when you're planning something and it doesn't go how you wish it would go. I think that happens often with covenants in our day and age. We don't talk about covenants often, but marriage is the most common covenant that people enter into. It's between usually a man and a woman, and they enter into a covenant saying, I will love you for all my days. And sometimes it gets broken, and that really sucks. It hurts. It hurts both sides. And it's really unfortunate. You know, they say about 50% of marriages end in divorce. And that's a really sad statistic. So now we're going to enter into a sermon on the book of Judges. And Judges is about the covenant that God made with Abraham. And if you're like me, you're thinking this is about 600 years after Abraham has died. And you're thinking, how does Abraham have anything to do with this? But the covenant that Abraham and God entered into was one like this. It said, God will give Abraham many children, and these children will spread out into the world. They will make a nation. They will be strong and great. That's what God's end is. In Abraham's deal, his end of the covenant is that his people will love God, that they will serve God, that they will be a witness to all the corners of the earth. And we have seen in these past few books, these last weeks, that God is fulfilling his end of the deal. First, Abraham has a kid in his old age. That's already a great blessing to Abraham. But then his children multiply. They end up in Egypt, and they multiply even more. And now it's not just a family, but a whole nation, a whole country. And God promises Abraham some land. And through Moses, God is able to redeem that promise, that Israel is brought out of exile in Egypt and into the wilderness, where they learn how to follow God, who God is, why God is holy. And they step forward again and enter the promised land through Joshua, who is a great warrior. And they take the land, and they drive out most of the people. So already there's a little bit of a failing, because God told them to drive out all of the people. And so now we enter into the book of Judges, where Joshua is now past, and the people in Israel are living in their land. And the question is, are they going to fulfill their part of the covenant? Are they going to be witnesses to the earth? Will they obey God? Will they stay holy? And then the next question, of course, will God stay in the covenant even though the people of Israel did not follow the rules given, and they did break the covenant? And so we see, starting in Judges 2, the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give to your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare to you. As soon as the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the people of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept. And they called the name of that place Bochim. And they sacrificed there to the Lord. And when Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went to each to his inheritance to take possession of the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had all seen the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years, and they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. They abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them. And he sold them out into the hand of their surrounding enemies so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. Whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them for harm, as the Lord had warned, and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. But then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. They soon turned aside from the way in which their fathers had walked, who had obeyed the commandments of the Lord. And they did not do so. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who afflicted and oppressed them. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them and bowing down to them. They did not drop any of their practices or their stubborn ways. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he said, because this people have transgressed my covenant that I have commanded their fathers and have not obeyed my voice, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations that Joshua left when he died, in order to test Israel by them, whether they will take care to walk in the way of the Lord as their fathers did or not. So the Lord left those nations, not driving them out quickly, and he did not give them into the hand of Joshua. Now these are the nations that the Lord left to test Israel by them. That is, all in Israel who had not experienced all the wars in Canaan. It was only in order that the generations of the people of Israel might know war, to teach war to those who had not known it before. And so there are the five nations: the Philistines, the Canaanites, the Sidonians, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and the Perizzites. And we see that the people of God have not kept their covenant. They have whored themselves out, it says. For to God, this is a marriage between God and the people of Israel. And the people are suffering for it. They were in terrible distress. And they cry out to God, please just save us. And for a time, it works. God raises up a judge. And these judges are not like the judges we have in our modern day. Of course, we have Supreme Court justices that are getting along in age, and they could not quite lead a people into battle. We have other judges that they decide between who is right and wrong in different court cases. If someone says, hey, you killed my dog, I didn't like that, you need to pay me back, you go to a judge, and the judge says, actually, the dog was attacking them, it was okay. Different sorts of things like that is what a judge does. In this time, though, we see that judges have a little bit of a different niche, a different place. We see the first judge is actually Moses. Starting in Exodus 18, Moses, after they leave Egypt, they're out of exile, they have received manna, Moses goes over to his father-in-law's house, and they're just staying in the land, waiting for God to lead them, and people come up to Moses all day long. He's sitting there, and they ask him, who is right in our dispute? And And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, says to him, okay, we'll set up a system so that you are not talking to every single person about every single issue. It's taking you all day. It's going to kill you. And they set up a system where they get all the men together. They teach them what is right and wrong. And they have the fathers in the family judge over the disputes there. And their fathers judge over the disputes between siblings that have already raised their own children. And different people over the different tribes. And eventually, if it gets big enough, Moses would still be the judge. And we see Moses fits all three things that a judge for Israel would do. Of course, judging, but also to deliver, that these judges were set up by God to deliver them out of the hands of their enemies. And we see Moses do that with Egypt. That's actually, first, they usually deliver, and then they judge. And we also see to prophesy, to receive words from God, that is what the judges are supposed to do, to be some sort of intercessor between the people and God in a slightly different way than the priests were. And so Moses fills those roles, Joshua fills those roles after him, and then Joshua dies, and everyone who knew Joshua serves the Lord. And the generation under Joshua, you know, one step down, they all serve the Lord because they knew Joshua. They got to see the things that God did through him. But then there's another generation, and they don't serve God. They didn't know what God has done. And so God sends judges, and he sends Othniel, and he sends Ehud. Ehud is fun because he hides his sword just by pretending he's left-handed. He kills a man, and he hides the sword just because the man is so fat. Shamgar comes, and Shamgar is funny because many of these judges have a long story about them, and Shamgar gets one line. After him was Shamgar, who killed 600 Philistines. That's all that Shamgar did. Then Deborah comes, and she gets to be a great basis for women in ministry and how women can serve God, and that's wonderful. And, of course, she has her own problems, too. She sings a whole song about how great she is for saving the people. And then comes Gideon, and Gideon is a greedy coward. He talks to God, and God says, you have to go destroy the temples to Baal. And Gideon says, maybe. And God says, no, you really need to go do this. And so Gideon waits until nighttime so that nobody would know it was him. And in the morning, they find out that the temple was destroyed to Baal, and Gideon is immediately called out, hey, you're the one who did this. And he's like, dang, I didn't get to hide from you guys. And again, God says to Gideon that he needs to go and do stuff. He needs to go save Israel. And Gideon says, how do I know you're God? Let me just put some... What I'm going to do is I'm going to kill a sheep. I'm going to take off its skin. I'm going to put it on the ground. In the morning, I want it to be wet. And God says, okay, sure. I think you're trying to be wise. And Gideon wakes up. It's wet, and he says, okay, but how do I know this isn't going to happen every time? I'm going to dry it out today. Tomorrow, I want all the grass to be wet and just keep my fleece dry. And Gideon does it, and the ground is wet around the fleece, and the fleece is dry. And Gideon says, oh, so it really was God. And he takes 10,000 men up to do battle. And God says, no, you are being crazy. Remember, I'm God, I'm all powerful. You don't need that many people. And Gideon says, but I'm scared. And God says, well, we'll just bring you down to 300 people. That's all you really need. And then we'll go and fight. And Gideon's scared, but he does it because his fleece method was so good. And he goes and he saves the people of Israel, and then he actually has another moment of wisdom, and then extreme greed. The people of Israel say to Gideon, rule over us, you and your son and your grandson, for you have saved us from the hand of Midian. And Gideon says, I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you, but the Lord will rule over you. And then he says, can I just have all your earrings, though? Like, just give me a bunch of gold. And here we see Gideon be very greedy, and he takes all the gold, he takes it home, he builds a statue, well, he makes an ephod, and he puts it in a city, and then everyone whores after it. And it becomes a snare to Gideon and to his family. The land had rest for 40 years, but there was a snare in the land. And then, of course, more people, more judges, Abimelech, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, Jephthah. Samson comes, and he has a great story that I'm sure you've heard, where his hair grows long, and he gets very strong. But Samson is an angry man. He is a jealous man. And he is a lustful man. And so what happens is he wants to marry someone, and she's upset. And so he tells a riddle. She gets more upset, because riddles do not make people happy. And Samson goes and defeats the Philistines. He doesn't end up marrying this woman, but she leaves him. He sets a bunch of animals on fire to burn down their whole town. Samson goes and he sleeps with some prostitutes, and he sleeps with Delilah. And Delilah asks, how are you so strong? I want to kill you. And he says, ha ha ha, well, if you want to make me weak, just give me some nice food, maybe? She does it. It doesn't work. And she asks again, how can I make you weak? And he says, ha ha ha, maybe try giving me a good hairdo. She does it. It doesn't work. Eventually, he falls to his lust, though, and he tells her, and he says, it's my hair. I'm a Nazarite, and I stay holy. And she cuts his hair. She makes him weak. She ties him up. They tie him up in a basement. Not the best idea when someone is given strength from God. And what Samson does is he tears down the whole house, and it lands on top of him, killing a whole group of people that were evil to Israel, but also himself. And we see that these judges come, and they save Israel, but they're increasingly evil. That first, Othniel, he was only a little bit evil because he married his niece. But then, as it goes forwards, Gideon was afraid of God. He was greedy. He made a snare to all the people. And then Samson, he is always hanging out with prostitutes. He's always doing terrible things. And the people of Israel are returning to their ways of evil, that they take rest for a short amount of time, for 10 years, for 20 years, for 40 years. And we see the most common theme, the most common phrase, is that the people of Israel did what was good in their own eyes, and they did not serve the Lord. And it's a sad thing, because the Lord wants them to be in covenant with him. He wants to be their leader. He wants to follow, to love them, to keep them safe. But the people regularly refuse. That in this covenant, God relentlessly offers his grace to people who do not deserve it and who do not seek it and never appreciate it once they are saved. It's a sad spot to be in, where there's someone who wants to save you, who wants to help you, and you are regularly refusing it and regularly not appreciating it. And we see that the people of Israel are failing time and time again. And God is saving them time and time again. And God is punishing them time and time again. And we're left with these questions of, will God keep his covenant as he has said he will? Or, because the people of Israel have broken it, will God leave the people of Israel? And as we saw before, God loves the people of Israel just because he loves them, and not because of their great works, not because they are a great nation. And so we see that this question isn't fully answered yet in the book of Judges, and it won't be fully answered until we're in the New Testament, where Jesus comes, that the cross will show the perfect fulfillment of the covenant. That the people of Israel are regularly looking for human leaders to save them, and God is regularly saying, no, let me, the Lord your God, be your king. Let me be your judge. I will rule over you and be kind to you. And they regularly say, no, I want to do what I like. And coming to the end of the book of Judges, we see a Levite who goes out and he makes a concubine. A concubine is like a second-rate wife. So already he's messed up because he is making this weird sort of half-covenant with this woman. But what happens is he goes and he stays in her house. And he enjoys himself. And her parents are actually quite nice. And they say, let us feed you. Just stay here. Just live with us. And he says, oh, okay, well, it's pretty good food. I'll stay. And again, they say, just stay, spend the night. It's not time to go yet. Just be happy here with us. And he says, okay, maybe just one more day. He does that for a little bit, and he leaves, and he goes out into the land of Benjamin, one of the tribes of Israel. And it's his own brethren, you know, cousins, distant cousins. They know they're related. And he's with his concubine. And he goes into a house, and in the house, they have a nice dinner. They go to sleep. But the people of the town come to him, the owner of the house. The people of the town come to the owner of the house, and they say, we want to see the Levite. Bring him out. They don't have good intentions. And the owner of the house knows this, and he says, just hold on. You don't have to be wicked. And they say, no, we really need to see him. We have to be wicked. And eventually, the Levite sends out this woman, his wife, to take his place. And what happens is they rape her and they abuse her, and she suffers. And before the end of the night, she lays down at the doorstep dead. And this Levite man, what he does is he wakes up in the morning and he says, ah, what a good sleep. He goes to go out the door and he says, hey, get up. It's time to go. She doesn't answer. He kind of pokes her with his foot and says, huh, don't know what to do now. And what he does is he cuts her up, 12 pieces, and he puts her in the mail to all his friends and family. To the 12 tribes of Israel, he sends her with a message saying, look at what the tribe of Benjamin has done to me and my family. Look how evil they are. And they say, well, nothing like this has ever happened before. We don't know what to do with this. And there's a war. The Benjamite women all die. And it's a little bit found out that he was doing some trickery to start a war. And the Benjamite women are replaced. That children, or, well, women from the other tribes are sent over to Benjamin. And it's a terrible thing where we see this covenant is broken in such a terrible way where a man who has promised to protect his wife, instead sends her out to pay for his own sins. And how beautiful it is that this covenant is now redeemed through Christ, that when we move forwards to the cross, that the cross gets to, of course, take payment for all the sins and replace all the sacrifices that were missed and be a more holy and pure sacrifice, but that Jesus, as our bridegroom, gets to instead see that we have sinned, that we deserve death, and Jesus takes it upon himself, that he says that he will lay down his life to save us. And that in this way, the covenant is made pure, made holy, and made new.